Tony Stark wants a Red Ryder BB gun, so he asks the Iron Patriot, who says he'll shoot his eye out. Ben Kingsley's not really the Mandarin, but it won't fully resolve until Shang-Chi comes out, and that would lead into a joke about Chinese dinner on Christmas, but it doesn't feel right to make that joke. Anyway, 30 years apart, both Iron Man 3 and A Christmas Story became the number one movies in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, happy holidays, everybody. My name's Sean Collier, and I'm here with two people, not pledging one of the monster frats. They do their own thing. It's Camila Adams.
Yeah, man. I am my own sorority.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Go Kappas.
I don't have the reaction to Monsters University because I, as we record this, I posted it 45 minutes ago. But we landed on, what was our final score? 47 and a third. An utter shrug of a rating for an utter shrug of a movie. Let's move on. It's the holiday season, everybody. Yay.
I want to quickly give everyone a word of the day, ooh, which is apophysis. Which is what Sean did in his opening when he made a joke that is possibly dicey and said, well, so I won't make that joke. And in their doing, made the joke.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Rhetorical device, which I recommend you use and also accuse others of using, because there's really nothing you could say when you get caught.
Apophysis.
I mean, I was trying to do this thing and I was like, and then the Mandarin, and then they go to the Chinese place and... Yeah, I have to stop there because what do you, you know,
right.
How do I tie that ribbon other than the art of apophysis?
Nice. Excellent. I didn't finish watching Shang-Chi, so I didn't know that there was a callback to the Mandarin in
Ben Kingsley comes back.
Oh, does he? All right. Now yes. I'll finish it now.
And the bad guy's the real Mandarin. I don't know. It's complicated.
As it always is with Marvel.
Yeah.
We'll get to what we're doing in a second. But as I was watching Iron Man 3, I was like, oh, so they came up with the plan later then. Like,
oh,
in my
1,000%.
In my brain, when I was watching Shang-Chi, I was like, oh man, Iron Man 3 set this up years ago. And then I rewatched Iron Man 3 and it was like, oh no, when they were making Shang-Chi, they went, hey, what plot lines haven't we tied off yet? Oh look, here's a couple that'll work. Iron Man 3, there we go.
There is no way that in 2013 they were like, yeah, well, we make a Shang-Chi movie. Like, they were riding high at that point, but they weren't riding that high.
True story, yeah.
Well, we're talking about Iron Man 3 because it is a holiday double feature. What happened last week, if you weren't with us for Monsters University, is we drew a couple holiday movies, and by the ridiculous bylaws of our holiday specials, if we land on one that is like a debatable Christmas movie, then we have to double feature it with a no-nonsense Christmas movie. And so we landed first on Iron Man 3, which we will lead off the episode with, and then we will throw in everyone with basic cable's favorite A Christmas Story to wrap it together. Let's have the big question, because I don't think we answered this in any of our previous seasonal spectaculars. What are like the three that you have to hit every year? What are your no debate I'm watching this holiday movies?
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Yeah. Robin, you go.
Die Hard.
Kiss Bang Bang.
And then I was going to say Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, a.k.a. Iron Man Zero.
Right. No, the first two I was going to say were National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and Die Hard.
And obviously Charlie Brown Christmas. I mean, it's only a half an hour. Does that count as a film?
Also, this is relatively new, but I think I've watched Carol every Christmas since it came out.
Go is another one that I always watch. Mm-hmm. But I keep meaning to add Krampus to the mix. But I always forget.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. Black Christmas. Black Christmas is great. Love Actually. Love Actually is probably number three. I try to get Love Actually. What?
I hate it. I've only seen it one time.
I didn't
all
I
of did, you people
I'm not part
who...
of the hate bandwagon. I hated it the first time I saw it.
All of you people who hate the power of love and the way that the Christmas season brings it out, that is a point. My only problem with it, who's trying to get laid on Christmas? You're just trying to get through the night. Just
trying to survive.
Get through to like that December 27th so you can catch up on sleep.
Well, isn't it the whole thing is like if you're single, like most people who aren't like in like married or like in a real relationship, usually like around Halloween, they're like, okay, now's a good time to break up so I don't have to deal with all the Christmas mumbo jumbo. Mm-hmm. Then it's back to, you know, your hotness or whatever. You're all looking for tail in what, April? May, after Valentine's Day is over and done with. And
once Valentine's Day is in the rear view, time to summer love.
Yeah. But Christmas Vacation, I think Christmas Vacation is the best movie that has the words National Lampoon's in front of it. Yes. I would put it in front of Vacation and Animal House.
Absolutely.
I'm kind of a diehard Animal House fan, and I haven't seen Christmas Vacation in a really long time because I find it upsetting.
Why? Is it just the manic that goes on?
To quote my dear friend Regina Cottley, he's just trying to give his family a nice holiday.
But that's what makes it heartwarming. You can try and things will always go wrong, but at the end of the day, no matter how many SWAT team members came through the windows... You're be with your family and you'll be happy. Right. It's fine.
And the beauty is like his wife doesn't really give him that much shit about it. Like she knows who she married. Like she's like, and she's like this, you know, he might get shit from the in-laws or from his kids rolling their eyes or whatnot. Even the stupid neighbors. But like his wife, the fact that she's like, you know what? I know this is going to happen. More than likely a fire department, a police department will be called this holiday season yet again. But this is my boo. This is my.
If you want to know what comic timing is, or if you are illustrating the definition of comic timing, cue up the scene where Eddie is settling in and he's telling Clark what's going on with his kids. We got the daughter in the clinic, got getting cured off the wild turkey. Son's at the carnival barking for the yak woman. And there's a moment in there where Eddie, with one flick of his finger, accidentally breaks apart one of those wooden rotating Christmas ornaments.
Yes.
Which is the best comic timing I've ever seen. From like the pause to the impact to everyone's reaction. This is what comedy is.
Beautiful. And then also when Clark is like, you know, can I get you anything else? Drive you in the middle of the road, like leave you for dead, like Jeffy, that just like that little still subtle shit like that. Like, yeah, that's my stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, enough of that. We got two whole movies to talk about here. The first of which is the only Christmas movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's Iron Man 3, everybody. I saw this and liked it and then didn't think about it. And while I was busy not thinking about it, I think this one got a little bit of a cult following as the underappreciated gem or something.
It's polarizing is what I would say. Really? A lot of people do not like this. And then the people who like it tend to really like it. And I am one of those people.
Samesies. This is, I guess this will be my favorite of the three Iron Mans. And it's mostly because of the relationship that happens, the interactions between him and the little kid. Like that's what really brings it home for me.
That is something that works for me more often than not is snarky, grown up, plucky kid interaction.
Yes. I love watching Robert Downey Jr. interact with kids anyway.
Yeah.
Because he treats them like fuck all. Yeah. And I love it. Like, I'm here for it.
My clearest memory of that screening, hearing the theater come apart when he says, yeah, dad's leave. You don't need to be a pussy about it. Like, that brought the house down. Because he's very good at selling that I'm being serious now and then saying something devastating and cruel.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? And I'm sure Harley grew up to be a better person for that interaction right there, for that relationship. Right.
By the way, let's acknowledge Tony Goldwyn's working hard this week. We mentioned Iron Man 3 last week because it was one of only a few movies from 2013 that made more than Monsters University. So we mentioned Iron Man 3, and in Iron Man 3, he mentions A Christmas Story.
Yes, within the first like 10 minutes or something. But I was like, hey, like he was this, like Tony is really working hard for us. Happy holidays, Tony Goldwyn.
Happy holidays, Tony. Yeah. As I mentioned last week, my strongest memory of seeing Iron Man 3 in the theater is that I saw it in Cape Town, South Africa, and that joke tanked because A Christmas Story is not really a thing there because cultural embargo and basic cable.
Right.
Not Yeah, not a thing.
Oh, we'll certainly get to the nature of Christmas Story's legend. But before we get into that, let's talk about Iron Man 3. Let's knock out the segments, beginning with a plot recap, which is going to be challenging.
Oh, my God.
Things occur in this movie. Here to tell you what happens in Iron Man 3 is Camilla Adams. Ready and go.
Tony meets scientists Maya and Killian at a Y2K party in Switzerland. Tony is a dick to Killian, thus making his own nemesis. Fast forward to after the Avengers destroy New York, and Tony is more manic than usual. He has PTSD, like 1,000 Iron Man suits, and problems with Stupid Pepper. Killian is now fucking with recoding DNA and tries to sell it to Stark Industries. He's making super soldiers or something. There's a terrorist with a love of the theatrics called the Mandarin taking credit for shit blowing up. Some dude blows up at the Chinese theater, and Happy gets hurt in the blast. The Mandarin takes credit for it, so Tony calls him out. With his home address. So obviously they attack, but at the same time, Maya comes to warn Tony about Killian. Maya survived, and so does Stupid Pepper. Tony escapes with his suit, but due to his recent Google search, he ends up in Tennessee by accident. Jarvis is broken, and Tony meets a little boy named Harley, who helps get him back to full Starkness. Tony finds the Mandarin in Miami and discovers he's just an actor playing a part for the real big bad, Killian. Tony gets captured. Maya is also involved, and Killian has Pepper and is going to dose her with super soldier serum. The serum is unstable. Maya needs Tony to help fix it, but he won't. They fight. Tony wins by playing musical chairs with the suits. Pepper is all juiced up and kills Killian. Tony destroys all of his suits, gets his electro thingy removed, and fucking Pepper survives.
You don't like Pepper?
No. Let's put it this way. I don't like Gwendolyn. Or Gwyneth.
She should be named Gwendolyn because she's that pretentious.
Yes.
Your time was 112, but what could you have done?
It's, yeah.
And I left off big chunks.
You skipped the whole
Iron Patriot, bit. And the president, and
President Albert from Twin Peaks is the evil vice president. Let's confine Gwyneth to this valley between the recap and facty. Thank you, fucking Pepper. One, I don't like the character,
right.
And two, that's probably because Gwyneth Paltrow is the least likable actress in the history of Hollywood.
Yes.
And this, I like this movie, but its big flaw is you expect me to care about their relationship or her, and I never will.
Exactly.
Robin is scandalous.
Robin's aghast.
I know that other people, I understand that most of the world hates Gwyneth Paltrow, and with completely valid reasons.
I hated her before she even actually came out as being problematic.
Yeah, I don't know. I find her charming. I believe in my heart that Goop is a long joke. There's no way that that's not self-parody or like she's in on the joke. I'm sure of it. I like her as an actor. I think because I spent many years of my life as a secretary, I feel some kinship with Pepper Potts. I'm not crazy about when secretaries end up romantically involved with their bosses.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm willing to, I'm willing to let it slide for fiction reasons here. And I don't know. I find that the two of them have really good chemistry.
Ugh. Okay. I just wish they just recast her. Like, I just don't know why. Ugh. Yeah.
Speaking of recasting, boy, is Don Cheadle an upgrade over Terrence Howard.
He is.
I want to love Terrence Howard. I'm the big sometimes crash defender. Hustle and Flow is great. Terrence Howard, he's a little wacky, but he's great. But yeah, Don Cheadle was a step up.
Terrence Howard gets in his own way, is stepped on his own foot, like gets in his own way. Like I've wanted to like him for so many years. I did meet him at some point. He, still he's that kind, he's a condescending fucktard, but like he's it's really difficult to cheer for him.
Was it the Globes or the Oscars where he feigned being overwhelmed with emotion at reading a list of nominees to cover up the fact that he had forgotten his contact lenses and couldn't read the teleprompter?
Oh my God. I have no
I actually kind of respect that.
Like he got out there and he started going and was like, he got through the first one and then it was like, oh, I'm just so honored to be able to recognize these great performances because he couldn't fucking see the words on the thing.
So did they like earpiece it into him? How'd they solve this problem?
Was there somebody else with him?
I think he had someone else with him, okay. And they took over. Yeah.
Wow.
and to tie off, I'm not going to go on my you can draw a direct line from the ascendance of Goop to the anti-vax movement. I'm not going to go on that rant. But I will say, either kill her off or don't do the fake kill off.
Yeah,
I
agreed.
Fake. I have no problem if you don't drop her into a vat of fire. But if you do drop her into a vat of fire, that's where she's staying.
Like, right.
I hate that move in superhero movies.
My big problem with this movie and most Marvel movies is that it has third act problems. I hate the end, like when he's like, I fixed Pepper. Like,
right, yeah.
And it's just like, don't worry about it. It got fixed off screen. And also, like, he blows up all of his suits, and then next movie, nothing's changed.
Right.
And including he hasn't broken up with Pepper yet. He's just like, Pepper's busy. That's why she's not in Avengers 2.
I'll explain that a little bit at the end of this Faxi segment. That does tie in. So let's get to it. Iron Man 3 was released May 3rd of 2013. It earned $174.1 million that weekend.
Wow.
It is the 14th highest opening weekend of all time. If you add it up, every other dollar earned by every other movie at every other theater in the country, you don't get to half of what Iron Man 3 made that weekend. The second place finish was week two of our old friend Pain and Gain at $7.5 million. So there was $165 million between one and two. Iron Man 3 repeated in week two. It's a two-week number one. Made $72.5 million its second weekend. It did get competition. The underrated Baz Luhrmann Great Gatsby debuted in second with $50 million. I think I like that movie.
You just called it underrated.
Yeah. I did call it underrated. Yeah.
I did not enjoy it, nor did I enjoy the book.
I love that book. The movie's okay. I like that Lana Del Rey song.
I love the Lana Del Rey song. Love this song.
I don't know if I think the movie's great or if I really love the Lana Del Rey song.
It's just a really good song.
Iron Man 3 spent 8 weeks in the top 10, earning $409 million. It is the 32nd highest grossing film of all time. Number two for the year 2013, behind Hunger Games: Catching Fire. This, by the way, for a sense of timeline, this was the first Phase 2 film. That means the first film after the first Avengers movie. And after a long break, it was 1 year to the day after Avengers. So it was both following up on, you know, the big one. And there was a full year break. So the audience was very primed for it, which is why it made $170 million in its first weekend. Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
It was nominated for Best Visual Effects. Lost to Robin.
Gravity,
correct. Yeah, that makes sense. And to the point that Robin was making, why does he blow up all the suits? Why does this feel so final? Robert Downey Jr.'s contract was up. He had signed on through this movie, and they were all pretending like he wasn't going to come back. But they were all pretending, included his agents and his managers, and they were serious enough about it that they did not film the intended post-credit scene. The thing with the Hulk was a, like, last minute, we'll throw this in here instead. What was supposed to happen was Tony was supposed to fly into space and meet the as yet not introduced Guardians of the Galaxy, who wouldn't have a movie for another year after this. That was going to be the big seed of Guardians. But because Marvel was afraid they would never have Robert Downey Jr. again, they made it finite enough that if he never came back, this could have tied up that character.
Huh. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. I like giving Iron Man an end if that's where what it came to. But then I wish that in Avengers 2, they had done a better job of acknowledging this.
Right. So that it's like, hey, so yeah, are you still working on new suits or what's
right?
Just something like that.
Right. Or like, you know, he broke up with Pepper off screen before Civil War. Make him break up with Pepper off screen before Avengers 2.
Did they break up? Because he's married to her at the...
Yeah, they get back together off screen.
Yeah, I would have wanted to see that breakup on screen.
I mean, she should just be like, you lied. Goodbye. You lied. And also, you are a mess. You are too much work.
Yeah.
I'm going to go live my great CEO life with my beautiful white dress suits.
Mary Beth watched about half of this movie with me last night and kept saying, yeah, here's the thing. I can't get into Iron Man. He's a cocky jerk. Mm. And that's either going to work for you or you're not, but she's not wrong. Like to a certain extent, anything that wrapped so much of this franchise, you know, the entire Infinity Saga wrapped around him almost as the lead character. And from time to time, it's like, yeah, why are you being a dick to everybody, though? Couldn't you be nice today?
I mean, yeah, that's true. And I, for some odd reason, I think that's my type, is the cocky jerk. because this was, I am enamored with Tony Stark. And I love you, honey, but he can be a cocky jerk sometimes. But it's also just like...
Was that to Dan?
Yes. But like, you're as smart as Tony Stark is. He's a fucking genius. And you're as rich as he is. I mean, how can you not be a cocky jerk? Like, yeah. You could buy anything, anytime, and make anything just about. And it's just like, I mean, it's not an excuse per se, but it is a reason.
I know I said I wasn't going to do Letterboxd list, but I have to shout out the following list. Entitled, An Enormous Estate is Destroyed While a Character Named Tony Helps a Lonely Blonde Boy Who Can't Rely on His Father in This Movie About Being Stranded in a Snowy Locale and Dealing with Mental Trauma and Being a Workaholic. It is a list of two movies, Iron Man 3 and The Shining. Anyway.
Nice.
So, I think that this, like, we mentioned Kiss Kiss Bang Bang briefly, same writer, director, Shane Black, and that movie came out in, I think, 2005, mm-hmm. and the MCU, as we know it, would not exist without it. Like, that movie was like, hello, world, here is what you do with recovering Robert Downey Jr., and who Jon Favreau, I guess, was like, noted. All right, let's go make Iron Man. Because I don't know if you remember this, when they announced that they were making an Iron Man movie, first of all, people were like, who cares about Iron Man? And secondly, people were like, with Robert Downey Jr.? Because, you know, he was like a fallen star at that point.
I was like, with Robert Downey Jr.?
Excuse me. This narrative diminishes the film Gothica with Robert Downey Jr. and Halle Berry, which was key to his comeback.
I would like to point. I would think that Chaplin would have been. I mean, yes. I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I don't realize how long in between. So but
he's multiple problems, right? But Chaplin, like his first Oscar nomination, that's 92, and then that was before he was in jail, and then he had a little comeback when he was on Ally McBeal, and then he went back to jail, I think, or at least got in trouble with the law again, and then since then he has, you know, touch wood, been on the level. So
I tell you, nobody has. I mean, he's gotten so many chances. Like even when he was in jail, like he was on the cover of fucking Rolling Stone, and you know, I was like Chaplin is when I started to pay attention. That was when I saw Chaplin. I was like, this is my dude. And I think I may have written him in jail at some, like when it was something I thought about heavily, but I don't remember if I actually did it or not. Yeah. And then the movie he filmed here is When I Met Him. And that was just like the highlight of my everything.
Wonder Boys.
Yeah.
Great movie.
So like, I am always a Robert Downey stan. As long as he doesn't murder anybody.
Did you just run into him, or did you have occasion to talk to him, or?
I've never told this story on here.
No, I don't think so.
So I found out he was in town. I started one night. I called all of the hotels and asked to be connected to Mr. Downey's room. Somebody connected me to his room, and I talked to him for like a couple minutes and came up with some story that I wanted to interview him for my school paper or whatever, blah, blah, blah. He was like, sure, you know, yeah, let's talk. Leave me your number and I'll call you back. You know, I'm sure he was high on something at the point when I talked to him. Then like the next day I ran into him. I was working at the Rivers Club downtown and he had like a temporary membership, and I ran into him there. And then we talked for a little bit, and then he told me I should go down to Nancy Mosser's to be an extra in the movie. I did that, and I was an extra in Wonder Boys.
Camila, you are a legend.
Yeah. I didn't know any of these facts. I didn't know you were in Wonder Boys either.
It's only like my bottom half. It was the scene where they're in the bar and Toby is like drunk in the booth.
Which bar is that?
It's on the north side. I forget the name of it. But it's like got like East Ohio. It's not East Ohio. It's like the part closer to the stadium.
Yeah.
But like, Yeah, like in Manchester, like in that area. And it's like, it's got like a little nice neon.
I remember last time I watched it, I was like, oh, I feel like I've been in this bar and I don't know which bar it is.
Yep, that's, well, that's my RDJ story.
Obviously, he was at least decently charming if he remained such a devoted fan.
Yes, yes, he was. He was good people. And I even met his son, Indio, on set at the time. Katie Holmes, not a delightful human being.
She was going through it at the time.
So the Camila gives this movie 100. I could quibble with... I think I quibbled earlier. Was there quibbling? Feels like I quibbled. And I do have a little bit of a eye roll whenever they find an excuse to take away half of an Avenger's powers and make it so that they can't call another Avenger. It's okay, we can let them be superheroes. But that aside, this is a pretty delightful movie. It's funny enough. The action sequences are good enough. It's long, but not too long. It doesn't really overstay its welcome.
It moves.
I like when the one villain walks through the fire dramatically. I really like when Iron Man gets hit by a truck suddenly and goes... And Ben Kingsley is great.
Oh, my God.
How good is he at both roles? Like, when he's in character, it's terrifying and compelling and a great villain. And then when he's
Trevor,
what's his name? Trevor. He's hilarious.
And it's a great twist too. Like, I love, like, you don't expect it at all. And it's just, yeah, Ben Kingsley, he really shone on this one. And I want to say, like, this, obviously I love this movie, but I think the important thing about this film is that we get to see more of Tony's humanity in this one. And so he becomes more of a person, and, you know, with problems and just the whole him suffering from his PTSD and having panic attacks and stuff. And despite the fact that he's a charming dick to this kid, but he's still, you know, his friend. But
the kid really helps, because in Iron Man 2, he's also being a dick to everyone because he's dying.
Right.
But he needed a kid to be nice to show, like, the good side.
Right. And also for him to even, like, I don't remember in 1 and 2 very much if he was, like, showed a vulnerable side as much as he did, like, when he was, like, pouring his heart out to Pepper after he gives her, like, the fucking house size rabbit. And he's like, you know, I'm most terrified. I can't protect you. I'm most terrified of losing you. I just, that's what I like more about it. And it just, I think that kind of helps to carry on. That helps with Iron Man continuing on in the rest of the films, because otherwise he's just like this character, this, you know, this non-deep also, person.
It's nice to acknowledge that almost dying in an alien invasion would have a severe emotional impact on a person.
Exactly. Like, you know, he's not the only one that's human. He was the only one that went up into the hole. And that would cause some shit. Like, that would make somebody a little panicky.
Even if you get shawarma afterwards, some things a good meal just won't wash away. Before we move on, thoughts on Guy Pearce?
He's fine.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I always kind of want to be like, yeah, Guy Pearce. But every time he shows up, I'm just like, that's cool. That's fine. Like, I don't have anything against him. But I feel like he doesn't quite ever make it just over the hill, like with his roles that he plays.
Never been as good as he was in LA Confidential. Mm. And that's not fair, because he's so great in LA Confidential. But, you know, it's all been downhill since the first time I saw him in a meaningful role.
I think Memento was the first time I saw him and knew who he was. And to me, I guess that's probably the top tier.
That's fair. That's fair. I have an outsized love for LA Confidential. But
I know you read the book and you don't read books.
I read almost all of the book. My goal is to finish it by the end of this calendar year. I know I only have like 14 days left, but I can do it.
Hey, God willing.
We're rooting for you.
Part of the established lore of Iron Man 3 is that, as initially conceived, Rebecca Hall was the main villain, and it was purely someone said, kids don't buy action figures of female villains, and then they inflated Guy Pearce's part.
Woof.
I don't know if that would have helped, because that character wasn't like very fully written either, but whatever.
I kind of like her, honestly. Like, this is me drinking the sand, but like, it's cool for there to be another somewhat 2.5 dimensional female character other than Pepper in this movie. So,
and someone who is like at least like on the same, almost on the same plane as Tony intellectually,
right?
She's still,
and she's very charming. She gets some good jokes in,
yeah.
I really like, my favorite thing that she does in this movie is when he says, I hope there's not a 12-year-old out there, and she says, he's 13.
Right.
Oh, she was good. It's good. It's a good movie. Let's rate it, because we got another one to talk about. Oh. I don't know, 72? I didn't look at the list. It just feels like a 72. Camila?
Because it's a little long, and I feel like there's almost too much going on. It's still enjoyable. It does move, but, and also because of the fucking Pepper situation, 88.
Did you say 88?
Yes.
I love how you have all these caveats to one of your highest scores.
One of your highest scores ever.
It's just, I mean, it almost made it to over 9. I was like, I just can't. I can't do it.
Yeah, I'm at 82, and I also feel like I'm like, sorry, guys, 82. Because I do genuinely love this movie. And actually, honestly, I kind of watch this almost every Christmas. Oh. I do the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang Iron Man 3 double feature a lot.
Well, almost, it feels natural. Like, you watch Kiss Kiss, and then you're like, well, you know what? Natural follow-up, Iron Man 3.
Yeah, Kiss Kiss is in the 90s, folks. Go watch it if you haven't seen it.
Yes.
I thought I was being too friendly at 72. No, I'm being a grump at 72. 80 2/3 is the final score. Let's look at the bingo card for both movies now.
Nothing.
Okay, I think that we have to count gun jams.
For what?
His hand things not coming to him.
Yes, okay.
It has like the same narrative device.
Yes. Does anybody get it?
I get it.
Ooh. That's a bingo.
All right. Oh, convenient.
I mean, I'm also just ready to bury this.
Well, I was going to, if I was going to bury it anyway. Like, this would have been the end. This would have been the last episode this card saw. But good. All right. So, not to waste, Robin got a bingo.
Yeah.
Wait, now wait a minute. It's the year 2021. This is Robin's fourth bingo.
That's correct.
Yeah, everything's coming up, Robin.
What do we do? What happens?
I don't know. Does she get her own special episode? You get your own special episode of like whatever. You get a bonus app on whatever topic you want.
It has to be a bonus episode because this is too broad. But at some point in 2022, as a bonus episode, we do any movie you want. And I don't mean any Nomia you want. I mean any movie you want.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah. I like that.
All right. Cool.
Congratulations.
All right. Hey, The Christmas Story. Right. Oh, what a classic. I don't know. What does everyone think of A Christmas Story? Tell me your relationships with A Christmas Story.
It was always on around Christmas time. This is the first time I've watched it purposefully from beginning to end. And my mom really likes the movie. It's just always there. It's always been there.
I have seen it from beginning to end before. I do remember the first time I watched it being like, this is the cutest thing ever. I love this. And I think that that was probably like 1 or 2 years before they started doing the 24 hours of A Christmas Story thing. Mm. And I was very much like, I'm not sure if this is that cute.
Do we need it for this long?
And I remember when I was a kid, the first time I saw It's a Wonderful Life, I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And I had been aware of like pop culture jokes, like on sitcoms that I was probably too young to watch, of people being like, ugh, It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
And I was like, Dad, what is up with this? And he explained that at the time, It's a Wonderful Life was believed to be in the public domain. And so it aired once a day on every local TV channel for the month of December. And so people got annoyed with it because of overexposure. Then it went back into copyright protection for absurd reasons. Go look it up if you're interested, folks. Ask your local library. But yeah, I think that this is our generation's It's a Wonderful Life in more ways than one.
I think you're right.
I know I saw this as a child only because I think I saw it like with my school, like one of those, like there's half a day left before the break. Everyone go into the gym. We're putting a movie on, because I clearly remember Ralphie saying fudge and and this being to that crowd, this being the funniest moment in the history of cinema. But I think I caught no more than scraps of it for the following like 20 years, like maybe when I was 19 or 20. I sat down like, I'm really going to watch it now. And it's fine. This morning, as we're recording this, I did a top 10 Christmas movies for DVE. And I put this at 10 And that was largely because I knew I couldn't get away with not having it on the
You were pandering, right. Sean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I mean, they would burn down.
Right. If you don't at me.
If you didn't put it on the list.
Don't at me. There's no Christmas story on this list.
And I already knew I wasn't putting Elf on the list, but I couldn't have neither of those. But even then, like, it's good. I don't have too much to complain about, but it's not like there's nothing great about it, right?
Yeah, it doesn't strike whatever chord that they hope to strike. Like, for me, like, I mean, I'm sure there's a total there's a different generation, there's other type of people, like, you know, there are people who this resonates with, or there are people who they can identify with something that's going on or happening here, like, outside of, you know, there being something you really wanted for Christmas. Like, there's really not much else in there that I'm just like, yeah, I get that. Like, I've been there.
If you don't own a television, let me tell you what happens in this movie. Somebody tell me when to go.
Go!
Ralphie wants a Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle for Christmas. He receives it. Okay, all right. En route to that, his dad wins a major award. It turns out to be a saucy lamp. Mom breaks it. The Bumpus family have hound dogs. They will eventually break in and eat the turkey. Ralphie beats the shit out of Scott Farkas. Flick gets his tongue stuck to a pole. Ralphie says, fuck, and is forced to eat soap. Blames Schwartz because he's a maniac. Little Orphan Annie shills for Ovaltine. Randy can't put his arms down. Ralphie is a pink rabbit. Santa kicks Ralphie right in the damn face. Everyone says you'll shoot your eye out.
Good.
Spot on. Okay, I do. There is something else in there that I can relate to is when Ralphie loses his shit and beats the bully's ass in the street and is like sobbing afterwards. I've been there.
Yeah, I think you've talked about it on the podcast.
Probably.
That might be the best sequence, including Randy hiding in the cabinet and, you know, his mom getting him out of it in a very nice little heartwarming way. That's good. I like that part.
I think the best line, though, is, you know, the thing that really stuck with me is that when he's talking, was it Ralphie? Yeah, Ralphie's talking about his dad's award, and he's like, it's the electric glow of sex or something. Yeah. The soft glow of electric sex is what he calls it.
And the way he leans up to touch the butt.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what I was going to say about this movie is that I think that the reason it works and the reason it's so popular is because everyone will connect to one of the vignettes, at least, you know, like you just talked about connecting to the fighting back against the bully. For me, the one that I always really landed on, this says so much about my personality. There's two. The first is the decoder ring, because I absolutely remember freaking out about things like that as a kid and leaving it older and wiser, as he said. And also his fantasy about his teacher giving A++++.
Yes. Oh, the best sequences are Ralphie's fantasies. His shootout in the backyard, and especially when he comes back and he's blind because of soap poisoning. That's
Oh great. My God, that's so great.
It was soap poisoning. It was like, and I think a lot of people can, and another, okay, I guess I keep coming up with other things to relate to in this thing, but like, you know, your parents punish you and you're like, you'll be sorry when blah 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 happens. Right. You have these fantasies of like some terrible demise on your part and your parents being all weepy and sad that they punished you for something,
right? And the parents are so good.
Yeah,
2-time Academy Award nominee Melinda Dillon and Kolchak the Night Stalker.
I do like the mom a lot.
Bob Clark wanted Jack Nicholson to be the dad, but no one was on board, including Jack Nicholson.
Yeah,
I don't think that would have worked.
Bob Clark, by the way, this is, of course, the director's return to holiday entertainment. In that 9 years earlier, he made seminal slasher movie Black Christmas. Made the first ever slasher movie Black Christmas, and then 9 years later had converted all the way to a Christmas story. Is an arc in your career. And in the middle, Porky's. He also made Porky's in 1981.
Jeez. Yeah, I wonder what the reins were like for him. Like, what the studio's like, listen, how many random weird toilet jokes did he have that they had to beg no?
Well, A Christmas Story was released on November 18th of 1983. It was in third that week. The debuting Amityville 3D was in first with 2.3 million. The Big Chill was in second with 2.2 million. Christmas Story just about 2 million. Went to number one in its second week, which happened to be Thanksgiving weekend. Made $3.9 million over the holiday weekend, beating the debuting Terms of Endearment, was in second with 3.4. It really only was in theaters for about 4 weeks, not even really all the way until Christmas. It kind of just faded. You know, it wasn't doing that great. Some people, you know, people who had seen it and already loved it, petitioned some local theaters to keep showing it through the holiday. But it basically just had a four-week run, earning $19.2 million, 39th overall for the year. It did get a brief re-release and another $1.3 million in 1984. We know about this movie because of Ted Turner. In the late 80s, Turner bought the MGM archive to fill time on TBS and TNT. A Christmas Story would, you know, was an easy thing to show towards the end of the year. Those showings just increased and increased until the 24-hour marathon began in 1997. And those ratings are ridiculously good. Typically, about 50 million people tune in at one point or another over the course of the 24-hour marathon. And since 2015, they've actually started doing dual broadcasting the marathon on TNT and TBS. So it always starts on one channel every hour. It'll start on TNT at 8 and TBS at 9, just so it is always about to start.
God.
Which paid off. In 2019, 13 of the top 25 programs on cable for Christmas Day were different showings of A Christmas Story.
I mean, it's easy as fuck. Like, there, yeah, if you got people at the house, if you got of all ages, just turn it on. Nobody's really paying attention.
It's vignettes. So you sit and you watch one little story, and then you go back into the kitchen and make some cranberry sauce or whatever the hell.
And between familiarity and the simplicity of the plot, you never once have to actually look at it. Like, you could never glance at the TV screen and still be following along perfectly well. Yeah. Hey, there are two little scene sequels to this movie. A tiny theatrical release in 1994 for My Summer Story.
Starring Kieran Culkin.
Aww.
With Kieran Culkin as Ralphie. And a Christmas Story 2, which went straight to DVD in the early 2000s. There is also a musical, multiple stage adaptations. The musical is by the La La Land Greatest Showman guys, and it barely ran. It ran for like a month.
Can't win them all.
But it was Tony nominated and well received. Like, the fact that every high school in America doesn't do that, you know, every third year is shocking. And hey, if you're looking for an activity and you're in this part of the country, the Christmas Story House and Museum is open now in Cleveland for both tours and overnight stays. On rare occasions, Ian Petrella, Randy himself, has conducted the tours.
Cool.
I think he does whatever, whenever. He's always around.
He has also appeared at Arcade Comedy Theater. He's been on Nights of the Arcade.
The thing is, I wouldn't know it if he were to walk in this door right now. I wouldn't know him.
No, you wouldn't know any of them. I mean, even if Ralphie, Peter Billingsley, showed up, like, you'd be like, you look like you have money. I don't know.
I think he's an attorney.
I thought he went on. Well, I thought he was writing. I thought he was script writing, because I know.
I might be confusing with another child actor.
Yet another tie this week. Credit again to Mary Beth, who knows celebrity facts much more than I do. He and Vince Vaughn are BFFs.
He was in the breakup with him.
Right. And he, for some reason, tying that thread to Jon Favreau, Peter Billingsley is an executive producer on Iron Man 1.
That's somehow what I thought. Yeah.
So the thing is, I don't like the narrator. The narrator is, what's his name, who's the writer of these stories. Gene Shepard wrote the book that this is based on, and he's doing the narration. And I think he's kind of annoying. Like, everything is, you know, very, like, kind of has this condescending tone. Like, that's my biggest problem with the movie. I'm like, shut up. I know Santa Claus came. It's fine.
The movie is
speaking
like
for himself.
It's very NPR qualities to me.
It just reminds me of Wonder Years or The Sandlot.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I never really have.
What's a theme, by the way? You're going to write a theme. Yeah, what's that?
It's an essay.
When did that happen? Is this a regional?
I have no idea. I literally have only ever heard that in this movie.
I feel like it's probably something that phased out in my generation, because I do recall being assigned a theme, like maybe like fourth grade, third or fourth grade or something like that. But then it being essay from there on out.
Mm-hmm. One thing I think I did not properly appreciate as a child seeing this movie is that it's set in like the late 40s or right. early 50s.
I think it's the 40s, late 40s.
Yeah. I was just like, okay, a bunch of kids. That's what life looks like in Ohio. And then I'm like, wait a second. They're listening to radio dramas.
Like, come on now. We had more than that.
That's something I like. I did see somewhere that they were deliberately vague. There are details in this that would apply from basically everywhere from the mid-30s to the early 50s in an attempt to make it look like the Christmas memories of a lot of different people.
That's cool.
Yeah, I buy that. Sure.
And it's because of that I never really knew when this movie actually came out. And I never really cared enough to like actually look it up or anything. I'm like, I don't know when this actually came out.
Those glorious 80s. Speaking of scenes that I'm like, yes, that is relatable. The accuracy of constantly being forced into ugly and uncomfortable clothing in the winter. Like, I have sense memory of like, why am I this bundled up? Like, this is not necessary. I can't move. Like, I'm going to survive sledding without all of these layers. And just like everything that Ralphie wears is like an ugly, scratchy. So like, I can feel the clothing in this movie. That I'm on board with.
I think the worst for me was like I used to get bundled up like that. But my mom drove us to school. I didn't walk to school. And then she would make me wear like these Dickies. Just the turtleneck like Randy in a Christmas National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And I would hate it. And there was, to this day, she still brings it up every so often. Anytime I say Kaj won't wear something. There was a sweater that I had. I absolutely hated it. My mom loved it and would always try to put me in it. And I hated the damn thing because it was itchy and scratchy. And it's something that still comes up to this day. She will bring it up.
My cousin wouldn't wear a sweater because it was too yarny. And that has stuck with me ever since, because I won't wear sweaters that are too yarny.
What does that mean? What does that equate to?
Oh. It means scratch. It means you could feel the individual pieces of the fibers of yarn.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah. That's bad. It's just like short cat hairs. Yeah, no, you don't want that.
Poking at you.
It certainly moves quickly. You know, it doesn't drag. You know, it keeps going.
Yeah. I mean, it's
in the ongoing story of Colin likes it. Colin had never seen this before and was like blown away by how charming and enjoyable it was.
But he knows so that it exists.
It was cool to watch it through fresh eyes in that way. I think that I'm going to give it a higher score because of that.
Did he know it existed though? Like,
he was
aware of it.
He lives in America.
Okay. Just, but he's never seen like any bits and pieces of it. Like, he never just was in a room when it was on.
He's Jewish.
Okay. There we go. So okay. That's right.
That's possibly part of what's going on. But yeah, it seemed like it was brand new to him.
Mm, interesting.
Do we just eye roll and move on with the closing scene in the Chinese restaurant? Or
he sure is.
All I'll say is, you know, this probably informed a lot of people for the first time that Chinese restaurants are open on Christmas. There's probably a lot of people who have, you know, because of this movie, ended up patronizing a local business when their turkey is destroyed by the Bumpus's dogs.
Jewish people knew. That's another, I'm knocking 2 points off, because why are there no Jewish families in that restaurant?
Right. Seriously, like y'all can't be the only family that just didn't.
People in Cleveland.
Because it's the Midwest in the 40s.
Oh, there's Jewish people in Cleveland.
This isn't set in Cleveland, isn't it? It's like rural Illinois. It's small town Illinois or something. Yeah, this is not set in Cleveland.
Okay. It's on Cleveland Street.
It's on Cleveland Street, which is a nod to where they're filming. But there's a clear reference to Detroit. Like, where the hell are they? No, they talk about
maybe
bears.
It's supposed to be ambiguous so that everybody can map their childhood Christmas memories onto it.
There's a couple specific football references that place it in like distant Chicagoland. It's like middle of nowhere Illinois, where I don't know if there were Jews in the mid 40s. I truly
there probably
don't.
Were a lot of Jews had to leave Europe in the first part of this century.
That's true. Yeah, there was a big century. Right, but hey, it's I'm sorry, I really wanted one of us to be a Christmas story person so that all of the people listening didn't have to listen to three people go, yeah, sure. About beloved classic.
I'm sorry, gentle listeners. this isn't where you're going to find the pomp and circumstance for A Christmas Story.
I hate messy food shots. That's one thing that.
Bother me. Like I kept thinking about like wipe that baby's mouth. Like why are you letting this happen? So
my sister's kids are bad eaters, and they went to like food school where you play with your food to make you less picky about eating.
Nope.
Yep.
No, I can't. Mm-hmm.
There's a really nice Disturbed fan theory that ties this in Black Christmas. Because has anyone but me seen Black Christmas?
You're talking about an older one, not the recent one, correct?
No, the original in 1974. No,
I have not seen it.
The killer in Black Christmas announces himself by making like lewd phone calls, like lewd ranting phone calls to the soon to be victims. And he's constantly talking about pigs and making pig noises. And so people who want to unite the Bob Clark movie cinematic universe says, that's Randy. He grew up Disturbed and ended up being a killer 30 years later. Yeah, I like it.
I buy it. I could buy that. Randy does seem like he could have easily grown up to be a serial killer.
You know, they keep leaving him in the snow. There's these vicious dogs running around. He doesn't have an easy time. Well, let's rate A Christmas Story. We apologize in advance. I can't go any higher than 60. It's fine, but I don't really care. So 60.
I'm going to go with 47.
Ooh.
I mean, it's just like.
Gonna get lumps.
Here I am. You said you wanted one of us to like this movie. I'm going to give it a generous 80.
Oh, wow. So that's Robin.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't not like it, but I just don't. I'm okay. It's fine.
Also, as Sean mentioned last week, this has given the world a bunch of what's that word? Chuji? Tacky gifts to give your in-laws.
Oh.
That's true.
Kitschy stuff or what do you call it? Knick-knacks?
You know, like buying your father-in-law that leg lamp out of Slimeball.
I looked at the little map on the Christmas Story House and Museum website, and I assure you, the largest building is the gift shop. So,
yeah.
So it's a 62 and a third. I win by not caring. It's, it's fine. There it is. Hey, it's really easy to watch. I know somewhere you don't even have to, you know, change the channel or make an appointment, set your DVR. It's, you know,
it'll be
just go stand out on a street corner, spin around a few times on December 25th. You will see A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Well, let's have a lightning round. I promise I won't talk about the 15 movies I watched this week of You Can't Handle the Truth. It's only been a week. Does anyone have anything to add?
I haven't watched a new movie, I don't think, but I have been enjoying Yellow Jackets on Showtime.
I keep seeing really strong notices for that. I don't know. Why did I just say strong notices?
I mean, you read your Variety this morning and you got that language in your head.
Yeah, for those who don't know, this is like probably the most terrifying thing you can think of, which is, you know, a bunch of high school girl athletes are stranded in some area. Their plane crashes and they're stranded for 2 years. And I'm terrified with what is going to happen just because that everything about that just really just fucks with me emotionally and mentally. But so far it's very compelling. I think we're like four episodes in.
Robin?
I saw West Side Story.
And?
I was there, so.
Yes.
Robin and I saw West Side Story.
I really liked it. I liked it more than I think I expected to. The thing I wanted to say right now is that I cannot get over. I follow this makeup influencer on Instagram. Her name's Katie Jane Hughes. If you like makeup, you should follow her. But she did a story yesterday where she was like weeping. And she's like, I just saw West Side Story. And I'm so sad. I didn't know what it was about. And I was like, you what?
I didn't know what it was about.
Like, she's like, I didn't know the plot at all.
Is she 12? I don't.
She's a grown woman.
I saw this movie Titanic. I didn't know how it was going to turn out.
I just, it's the funniest thing in the world to me. Anyway, a good movie. Sean's going to owe me a beer because that's not going to win Best Picture.
Yeah.
Listen, it's going to win Best Picture.
Okay.
It's I mean, maybe not now that it didn't make much money, because nothing that's targeted at adults is making has made money all year. I don't know why anyone's surprised. But look, do you think the sad Western or Kenneth Branagh waxing slightly dull about his youth, or what's even close? What is going to beat it? Like, what is the best picture? If not Steven Spielberg and Tony Kushner adapting one of the most lauded and beloved films of all time, which already won Best Picture once in a year without a big heavyweight contender, everyone's going to say, shrug, West Side Story, right?
I understand. This is why I think it was worth the bet. I still think you're going to owe me a beer, but I lost the beer bet last year, so.
Yeah, I mean, I could be wrong. It could lose steam, and, you know, it's a new Academy. Maybe The Power of the Dog really is that close. Maybe Dune will win. Hey, Dune's right up there. Everybody loves Dune.
But, like, literally the movie came out 5 days ago, and, like, it might as well not exist.
Yeah, it's... Everyone keeps trying to find the adult-targeted movie that will lure adults back to movie theaters, and y'all, it's just not going to happen yet. Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm going because that's where I live, but for the most part, teens are going because either they don't care or they've looked at the statistics and know that they don't really need to worry about being in a big open public space, and grown-ups are more tentative, so they're just waiting the 4 or 6 weeks or whatever before things come out at home. Like, it's not, you know, everyone went, oh, it only made $10.5 million. What a flop. Like, yeah, this has been happening all year long.
Right.
It's, anyway, I'm exasperated. I loved West Side Story. The only thing that kept it from, you know, being one of my favorite movies of the year was that Ansel Elgort is bad.
Yes.
That young man does not know what he's doing. More than made up for by the fact that the rest of the young cast, especially, most of whom are in their first prominent feature role, are great. Riff is great, and Maria is great, and Ariana DeBose, who was in that ill-fated The Prom movie last year, so I guess she's already done one thing. She's great. We talked about Iris Minas, who plays anybody's. The cast is fantastic. It looks great. It sounds great. Rita Moreno. Rita Moreno, everybody.
Rita Moreno is in it.
They wrote a role for her so that she could do both. I don't think she's going to win another Oscar, but I think she will be nominated.
I hope she's nominated. I thought she was great.
Yeah. But, like, it's really good, right? Like, we're kind of talking around it.
Yes. No, it's great. And if you are at all into that kind of movie, you should definitely see it.
Yes.
Because I'm not really into that kind of movie, and I really liked it. So
I just don't think we needed a reboot of West Side Story.
We did not. No one did.
Especially in, like, in 2021. It's like, really? We're going to... Okay, that's fine.
Also, there was this I read on the Wikipedia page, it was like, they made new choreography. And I was like, did they?
I'm sure the choreography people know the answer to this. I'm like, you mamboed, and then later you, like, jumped with your knees up, but snapping down. And you did the things.
Like, in the very first shot, they're doing, like, the iconic West Side Story, like, peacocking gang jump.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I doubt I'll see it. Like, one of these days, maybe it'll be on something for free and I'll have nothing else to do. I'll be sick in bed or something like that. And sure.
Stars might align.
Or maybe my daughter will become a drama kid and she'll absolutely want to watch this new version of West Side Story because that's so old. You know, I'm really grappling right now with because Yellow Jackets is like, you know, I'm coming back to it. Like, it's set in the now and then it flashes back to 1996. And it's just like one of those things. It's like, oh my God, like late 90s, my basic, like, kind of high school years or whatever now is like the oldies, like old enough to be a flashback and something.
Oh, you've reached flashback age.
Yes. And it's just like, oh my God, Liz Phair is oldies. Like, this is bullshit. whole oldies.
I will shout out The Tragedy of Macbeth. I don't know when it's coming out. I don't know when anything is out. Everything is out on 14 different days. I thought Being the Ricardos wasn't out for like 3 weeks. It's playing in theaters right now. I don't know when the hell this stuff happens. At some point, you'll be able to see The Tragedy of Macbeth by Joel, not Ethan Coen. I don't know what happened there when one of them said, I need a vacation.
Ethan Coen's trapped under something heavy.
Right. It's so good. I'm a sucker for Macbeth and sparse, weird adaptations of Shakespeare. The cast is really great. I was struggling a little bit with my best actor nominations. I was like, this is kind of a weak field. Then I watched Tragedy of Macbeth and it's like, oh, Denzel Washington playing Macbeth. Number one. What's, you know, the
As
all he had
to
do was show
say,
up.
The name of the category is best actor.
Right. You know, he needed to say the words and look at the screen and we can give him an Oscar. It's over. But Frances McDormand is great. The rest of the cast is great. It looks really cool. And it's an hour and 45 minutes long. Take that, Kenneth Branagh, and all your four-hour Shakespeare adaptations. Wow. Just cut some stuff out. Right. Just get down to the meat of it. It's a movie. We're all going to have to pee eventually.
Yeah, bless their souls.
Yeah, liked Tragedy of Macbeth a lot, and I like West Side Story, too. That's enough. Look, we told you the Christmas movies you like. We talked about Marvel. We talked about A Christmas Story. We talked about other things. We've done enough content for you. We'll take a little tiny holiday break here.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be one extra week off since we have dropped 3 episodes in the past month, so we'll take a little holiday break, and we will be back with our first episode of 2022. Although I think based on the fact that we're recording this now, I don't think we get a veto on this one, right? We don't get our vetoes back yet?
No.
All right. This is officially the final draw of 2021 then. And so when we are back with you again in a brave new year, which I'm sure is going to be pretty much the same as the last 24 months, the first thing we will talk to you about will be Hardball? What the hell is Hardball?
Keanu! Yes.
Go on.
Yeah, he coaches a little league team in the inner city or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-mm. It's cute.
One of those feel-good films.
Okay. Keanu Reeves, Diane Lane, and D.B. Sweeney.
D.B. Sweeney.
Due to a typo, Wikipedia described it as a sports comedy film. Okay.
Comedy film.
Yeah, one of those. Oh, this was the The somber note here is this is the first post 9/11 Nomia.
Okay.
This was released on September 14th, 2001, featuring a child Michael B. Jordan.
Aww.
Definitely didn't know that. Well, of course I didn't know that. I didn't know this movie existed.
Right. Put him. Aww.
Okay, great. A baseball movie. I wanted The Natural. I got Hardball. Fine. Good enough. Hey, before we get out of here, let's look at 2 number one songs in America, nearly 30 years apart. Iron Man 3 was released on May 3rd, 2013. What was the number one song in America?
Was it last episode of 2013?
Yeah, let's go with Blurred Lines again.
Yeah.
No, very close. Blurred Lines was easily the number one song of the year, but it had not yet ascended.
Katy Perry?
No, but this is one of those songs that if I told you it was by Katy Perry, you would just believe me. Like, it's close enough to a Katy Perry song.
Wrecking Ball?
No.
So, it's not Taylor Swift because that's too distant from Katy Perry.
No. I would say that if this female singer's catalog and Katy Perry's catalog switched suddenly in a Mandela effect situation, you would barely notice.
Who? Jessie J?
No, this person's much more famous. This person is nearly as famous as Katy Perry.
Ariana Grande.
No. Well, earlier. Longer tenured performer.
Demi Lovato?
If you look at Camila's screen right now, one color dominates over all the rest.
Pink? How dare you put Pink and Katy Perry together like that? I refuse. No. No.
I'm sorry. Which one side are you on?
Pink. I am on Pink's side.
They're both fine. Pink has like a little more edge, I guess.
Anyway.
The Teenage Dream album, full of bangers. I've got no problem with either one.
I mean,
of them.
I don't hate Katy Perry, but I just feel like they're two different animals.
I agree.
Blow a Kiss or
no, you might not remember this one.
Is this the one with the guy from Fun Period?
It's featuring somebody, but I forget the
Nate
guy from
something.
Fun Period. Yeah, Pink featuring Nate Russ.
Give me a reason.
Just give me a reason.
Just give me a reason.
Wow, that was number
one. I believe that
is
the guy from Fun Period.
I like the other guy from Fun Period, the one who became the hotshot producer, Antonoff, Jack Antonoff.
I might be wrong about who this guy is.
We'll find out. Watch it be like, you know, someone from another country. Let's check. Nate Russ, American singer song. Yes, it's the guy from Fun. Good job. Good job knowing that. I once saw Fun accidentally. Like, I was in New Orleans on a New Year's Eve, and I was walking down the street, and it was like, hey, Fun's playing over there. I was like, get out. All right. Okay, I'll look at that for 15 to 20 minutes. They're towards the end of the set. They'll play some hits.
Nice.
Yes, that Pink song that is easily forgotten about was the number one song in America when Iron Man 3 came out. But A Christmas Story came out November 18th of 1983. What was the number one song in America then?
Paul McCartney.
No.
Hall and Oates.
No. I'm sure that this is in the same radio format.
Lionel Richie?
Correct.
All Night Long.
That is correct.
All right.
This is when I learned that song has the most unnecessary parenthetical in a title ever in the history of music. Because the name of that song is All Night Long, parentheses, All Night. Yeah.
All Night. All Night. That's what.
You could do that with any song.
They just want to make sure
lean
you
on
get
me,
it.
Parentheses, lean on me.
They want to make sure you get it, that you feel it, that we are going on all night long.
It's not.
Lionel's not here for the bullshit, John.
You got to illustrate. It's not escape, parentheses, the Pina Colada song, because you never noticed anything about the song other than the Pina Colada part.
He wants to make sure you are fully abreast of what's going to happen. about the time frame.
The creative decisions of Sir Lionel Richie. I just think we could have saved at least two, if not three words in that song title.
It's like in a contract where you write out the number and then you have to put the numeral in parentheses. Number one.